And we're back. You are listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. Today's program, we are talking about the role of genetics in cancer prediction, cancer diagnosis, and cancer treatment. Our guests are biology professor and genetics expert, Dr. Joseph LaChance, certified genetic counselor Katie Lang, and prostate cancer survivor, Mr. Clay Kroom. We're going to go ahead and take the call from Cornelius in Atlanta. I think his cell phone dropped. Cornelius, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining the conversation today. What's your question?
My father was identified about 13 years ago with prostate cancer. My question is, what are the chances of me, and I have not had genetic testing done, but what are the chances of me developing prostate cancer? I'm 66 years of age. I've had PSA done yearly, and everything seems to be fine. But from your discussion, I just wanted to get an idea. What do I need to do to try to protect myself?
That's a great question. Katie?
Yes. Hi, Cornelius. So the biggest thing that I would want to know, you know, from what you've told me is kind of what does the rest of the family history look like? For these high-risk mutations, they're unlikely to be the cause of just a single case of prostate cancer in one relative. If there were other cancers in the family, like breast, ovarian, pancreatic, other prostate cancers kind of clustering around in the family, that might be more of a red flag. Certainly, we know anytime there's a close relative with any form of cancer, you know, our risk might be a little bit higher than the general population. But without a strong pattern in the family, it probably wouldn't rise to the level of needing genetic testing.
Okay.
But it sounds like you're doing all the right things if you're working with your doctor and getting the screening.
Yeah, I am. I had an uncle on my maternal side of the family who also had prostate cancer. That was not my dad. I say it maternal, so it wasn't my dad's brother. But I know that that issue does run on both sides. Just had that question, but thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think one thing that's actually really good that Cornelius is doing is getting his PSA levels tracked over time. Mm-hmm. And this is actually one thing that it's like if a physician or a genetic counselor wants an idea of trying to say, well, are you at high risk now? It really helps if they've got a baseline and they know what things were like in the past, because maybe your PSA levels, maybe they're a little higher than the average guy. And so you want to be able to see, have those changed over time. And so by doing that, at least you know that, you know, you might be moderate, low risk, but at least you can at least notice those changes. So that's really
awesome.
Good.
Let me give out the phone number once more. Thank you so much for your call, Cornelius. We are taking your calls live at 404-880-9255. We're taking your tweets at CCRTD. Go ahead, Mr. Kroom.
Like my PSA was running 1.8 and it jumped to 2.4. Now, I know a lot of guys say that's low. That's really low. That's why when I went back to visit my doctor after the biopsy, I said, well, I don't have any problem. I got buddies of mine that said it's 4.5 or it's 5 point something. But it really didn't matter. It's the fact that it jumped. It had a quick jump. That quick jump was a red flag. And when I did the biopsy, it came back positive. The level of the reading of the 1 point this or 2 point, it really doesn't matter that much. It's a sign that something's going on.
So if it's in your gene, it's just in your gene.
It's a predisposition. It means your risk is higher than other people to develop that cancer, but it's not 100% by any means. So it's really just a guide for your doctors to figure out how closely to follow you, when to act, you know, if there's a change in your baseline. So it's really just a guide to kind of tailor screening, because we're all supposed to get some level of cancer screenings based on our age and certain frequencies. So the genetic testing helps to sort of tailor those more specifically to a person's risk.
Sure.
And you could think of even like when you go in to see a physician. I mean, if you know there's a family history, maybe you go in a little bit younger, or maybe depending what you check on the census, maybe you say, well, I'll go in a little bit earlier or later. And I think all that information matters, but you, like, should 10-year-olds be going in and get tested? No, it doesn't make sense. And so, but you want to be able to use that information. And I think it's something where just remember is that that information will help you, but it's not deterministic.
Right. And then, speaking about deterministic and destiny, cancer, typically when we hear the C word, We equate it to death. And we know now with all of the amazing research that's being done here at Clark Atlanta University and the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development and Dr. LaShans, you're involved in research. We are so advanced. We know so much more now than we did then. And usually when you know better, you do better. Let's talk about why some men, typically African-American men, don't go. What causes, Mr. Krim, what do you think causes? And I think your situation seems to have been a little bit different because of your family history and the folks who you've had experience with prior to your own diagnosis. But what causes African-American men to say, I'm not going to get tested? What are some of those misconceptions?
That was one of the reasons why I was glad to be on the advocate list for the doctor. And I talked to guys periodically about getting checked. Because a lot of my friends, I've run into guys that have had prostate cancer.
Didn't know it.
Some of them didn't know it. Some of them had it, knew it, and still wouldn't do nothing about it. Because they feared dysfunction. They looked at the sexual part of their life as a major part of their life. I think greater than life itself.
Right.
That's wrong. You want to live.
Yeah.
And even so, that part of it is a misconception because you can still function with the surgery, after the surgeries. And the sooner you get the surgery and get yourself back active, you can live a normal life. There's only one little aspect of it that you may not have that you had before, but you can still live a nice life and a quality life with your spouse or with your friend or whoever you're with, and not let that be a major deterrent from moving forward.
Sure.
I know around the time when my dad was diagnosed with it, those guys during that time frame, they were World War II veterans. They feared it. And they feared it because they really didn't want anyone to think that they had dysfunctionality. And my dad and I talked about that because I did ask him, why didn't you go check? Why didn't you do something about this earlier? His brothers, too. I talked with them, too. And they just didn't feel comfortable about that, which is not something today because of technology and change in medicine, change, advanced stages. You can function just like you were functioning before. And live a quality life and keep moving. But if you don't get checked, or if you get checked and find out you had it and you sit on it, and it get outside your prostate, and it get to your bone, that's what happened to my father. Once that cancer spread to your bones, it's going to be very difficult. You're going to be fighting for your life. Because if once it spread through your body, they'll set a time for you on this earth. So it's always good for men to go through this, all the steps necessary to get yourself checked out thoroughly and that you around to live a quality life with your wife, your kids, your grandkids. And that was my expectation. I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to fight it quick.
All right. Dr. LaShans, talk about that?
So one thing that comes to mind is that, you know, if we're lucky to live to be 90 or 100, almost every guy would get some form of prostate cancer if we're that lucky.
Yeah.
But at the same point, some people end up getting it at an earlier age. And when it happens at an earlier age, that's when you have to really, really look out for it. And I think that's something where – I mean, I think Clay's been really, really brave in terms of embracing not only testing but, like, you know, being willing to talk about it with other guys. And I think that's the thing is that it's like – it's something where – if I live to be 100, that'd be great, you know. But it's something where it's not necessarily something you can avoid, you know, in terms of that. But it's like you want to know, are you likely to have a severe form of it that could then, you know, spread to the rest of the body? And I think that's something where if you just sit there, don't get tested, then you're not able to intervene and to do anything if that's the case.
Right. We always talk about how knowledge is power. And yet in an age of amazing amounts of knowledge, we still retreat and we still say, I don't want to do this. And we talked about the ego. I don't know if ego is different in different cultures. But I do know that the African American culture is, you know, it's just a tough thing to break for men in terms of talking about it. Dr. LaChance, you recently went to a conference. I think you were talking earlier about getting people to just participate in research studies.
Yeah. So it was really interesting. So it was about disparities in prostate cancer, and there were all sorts of people from Sub-Saharan Africa, from the Caribbean, from the United States.
Was this specific to African American?
It was specific to people with African descent.
Okay.
So it could have been Afro-Caribbean, could have been somebody from UK.
Sure.
And everybody had their own sort of unique issues dealing with patients in terms of how much do you trust your doctor.
Right.
That really varied across. But one thing is, yeah, that issue of fear of being examined by a man with a glove, you know, and things like that. That was almost universal. But yeah, it was interesting, too, to see how prostate cancer risks were elevated in every single population that people were looking at, but how it manifested was really different. So in England, where you end up having, you know, a different type of health care, men of African descent actually had higher risks. But once they were treated, the survival rates were the same. So it's
wow.
So there was a disparity, but it wasn't this disparity once you identified it. And so the idea, I think, was that at least there they were identifying cancer a little bit earlier than we might hear.
Sure.
So that's one thing, that on top of genetics, family history, and everything, there's also access to healthcare, and then whether you take advantage of the healthcare that's out there. And so I think it was just interesting to see that even though everybody was studying different populations, a lot of the same themes were coming up, you know? And
sure.
So even like an example of it would be, I'm involved in a study where we're looking at prostate cancer risk in Senegal, Ghana, Nigeria, and South Africa. And we had a lot of individuals from Ghana that were a little bit younger. We had some men that were 35 years old that had prostate cancer. And it's because we were screening a whole population. And it was just like it wasn't that common, but still there were some that got it that young, where we looked at data and we didn't see anybody that was 80 years old from Nigeria or Ghana. We're like, what's going on there? And it just was a mentality of, well, if you're 80, well, I'm not going to worry about getting tested or whatnot. And then in Senegal, we actually saw a little bit different patterns where we had a lot of older men and we're trying to figure out, like, why is this in this our preliminary study? And collaborator mentioned that a lot of the men that in the hospital they were studying, they were Muslim. And so if they were trying to kneel and pray, having prostate problems might be some reason why they might go to the doctor. And so there's cultural aspects can actually play a big role in terms of whether you actually go to a physician or whether you're actually involved in a study. And so I think it's one thing where it's a personal choice whether you'd actually choose to say, okay, do I want to give some saliva or some blood to be involved in a study? But the idea to think about is that it might not just benefit – it might not directly benefit you, but it could help your grandson. It could help somebody out there. But once again, that's a personal choice, and you want to read up on it and get an idea of, like, you know, what is this information going to be used for? But as researchers, we want to have as many people as possible, you know, agree to be in studies. You know, because basically the more information we have, the better we're able to detect this. It's up to you.
Information is not just for you, but it's for a generation that's not even here yet.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. Let me give out the number again. You can call us at 404-880-9255. You can tweet us at CCRTD. I've got a question about treatment options. In your study, in your research, have you noticed treatment options, the same treatment that's offered to, say, a white male and is offered to an African-American male, are the results different with the same treatment options because genetic makeup is different or culture is different?
I don't want to plead the fifth on this, but actually I don't know. No, I don't know. And I think this is something that we need to study more. And I think that's the thing, is that it's – and I think one thing, and actually there's an interesting talk. One of the guys, John Carpton, he's on the West Coast now, but he actually made this point of making a distinction between race and ancestry in terms of whether you're talking about the social construct and how you self-identify or what do your genes say. And the idea is that you might get different outcomes on different treatments, but you want to be saying, okay, what am I looking at? And so the idea is that you might actually see some. But I think that's the thing that we need more data. And actually – information might be out there, but I don't want to claim to say I know what's out there.
No, and you know, and I'll let you jump in, Katie. And I ask this because my mother, older Jamaican woman, matriarch of the family, you know, she was a nurse's aide, but you couldn't tell her she wasn't a nurse because she knows, you know, but she was prescribed some medication once and she kept falling down. And she determined that the medication wasn't wrong. It was too much. And so that made me start thinking about weight. Smokers, non-smokers, treatment options seem that it seems that it would affect us differently. So, Kay, do you want to jump in?
Well, yeah, there is a whole area of genetics research called pharmacogenomics. And that whole idea is everything that you're saying, that we're really not all the same. You know, there's physical differences, mm-hmm. but there also could be genetic differences that affect how we metabolize medications. So I always tell people these days, you know, those drug commercials, they're endless on television. Right. But at the end, when they talk really, really fast, if you listen more and more of them, you'll hear them say your doctor might order a genetic test to see if this, you know, if this drug is right for you. Mm-hmm. So we're actually entering this time where there actually might be true, you know, genetic differences how in how we metabolize drugs or respond to drugs or side effects that we're starting to finally look at so that we can tailor doses to reduce side effects, mm-hmm. to maybe even avoid certain medications altogether.
Right.
There's a common drug used to treat breast cancer called tamoxifen. And we already know that there are some small genetic changes that keep people from metabolizing tamoxifen very well. So you're not going to put somebody on a medication for 5 years if you know from the beginning that they're unlikely to get a lot of benefit from
right.
it. So that's sort of an area that we're working on.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back to talk with you about genetics and prostate cancer.
Is your annual inspection past due? Regular checkups by your doctor are the key to finding health problems early. 1 in 6 men will get prostate cancer. If you have a father or a brother who has had it, your chances of getting the disease are even greater. If you are a man over the age of 50, schedule your appointment today. Discuss whether testing for prostate cancer is right for you. This message is brought to you by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University and WCLK.